Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. Man, I notice I always like go last.
Yeah.
In the hellos.
Because you're loudest.
We have a set order now.
Do we?
The one we've been doing for the past however many episodes.
I guess so, yeah. It's been grandfathered in.
Yeah. So, how you guys doing?
Not bad.
Yeah.
And we just got back from a trip to Tokyo Hands.
Mm-hmm. A fruitless trip.
A fruitless trip?
Yeah. They didn't have fruit.
No, they didn't.
Oh, that was funny. Nowhere in Japan is fruit anymore. What are you talking about? Now I wanted to get some more knives for my survival gear.
Great.
More knives, meaning you already have some?
I have a bowie knife. Okay. And I have a smaller hunting knife, but I wanted to get a lock blade knife.
And what exactly do you hunt in the wilds of Osaka?
Yeah, what would you use the knife for? Zombies?
No, not zombies.
Unfortunately, Lyle's look didn't come across on the sound.
It's all, you know that I'm reading some survival books.
Yes, I do. You tell us about them often.
I update you. I share the information, and I get ridiculed. Despite the ridicule, I still share.
And despite the ridicule, we still appreciate you sharing.
Very much so, because it gives us more opportunity to ridicule.
Not where I was going, but I was thinking it.
And one of them recommended that you... Actually, both the books I'm reading recommend getting a lock blade, because you can always carry that around.
Yeah, big solid knife. You can use it to open cans that don't have a... Or if you don't have a can opener handy.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, and if somebody else has a can, then you can use the knife too.
Yeah, you can use the knife to take the can.
That's what I was going to say. Use the knife to take the can, then use the knife to open the can. It's like, aren't you going to share? Well, seeing as how I have the knife, no.
Considering the gun laws in Japan are pretty strict.
Right.
Figure like a knife's going to be one up on their
no gun
wrapping tube or whatever they have here.
Ah, funny. Yeah. Because they don't know to stuff their wrapping tube with newspaper.
Yeah.
All
right, funny. Anyway, so the point was,
got up
Tokyo
early
Hands,
to go stock up, and it was on Wayne's way, so he kept me company as we searched for different survival gear, including a Zippo lighter.
They didn't have it at Tokyo Hands.
Well, they had Zippo lighters, but they had like special edition like Zippo lighters.
But I think Zippos like are really special here, you know. So
they had one where it was two halves of a heart, you know, like the like that jewelry,
well,
like
that's
a pair,
adorable.
Pair of Zippos, yeah. And Wayne wouldn't, you know. Pay the extra. Well, and you don't have to say who has the other half of the heart.
You didn't want that odd look from the clerk.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Mm. I didn't balk at the heart. The fact that it was pink, all right? Yeah. But anyway, no, they didn't have much in the way of survival equipment.
Hmm.
They didn't have much in the way of camping equipment either, did they?
No, it was pretty sparse. Oh, although we could have bought a $600 flashlight.
Yeah. Ooh.
It was about the size of a pen, lengthwise.
I thought it was one of those solar-powered flashlights, but it wasn't.
Oh, was it one of the Faro flashlights that you shake?
No.
No, it was just an LED flashlight.
Oh. That was $600.
$600. Yeah, that was about it. Yeah. I think that's part of the description. LED, and then the other is $600.
Yeah.
And then the price.
$600. Louis
Vuitton or something. LED $600. Is it $600? Oh, $600.
A little pair of flashlight with little heart. Split them apart.
Would have done it, but it was pink. And $600.
Yeah, that one was $600, not the fact it was pink.
Well, I'm up to 8 movies now on the B movie count.
Congratulations. What's the top runner so far?
Actually, I started watching a movie called This Is Not a Test. That's not bad. It's not bad. Although it explains something about it. Yeah, it's maybe early 60s and something about an atomic bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they say atomic bomb. But it just starts straight away. Like there's the cop and he's got a roadblock and it's not explaining anything in the movie right now. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah.
I generally like stories that go like that.
It's like
drop you in the middle.
Yeah. Like you know the old TV shows or older movies where they want to just really confine the set. You know they don't have the money, so it's all in like one location. So right now it's at the roadblock, and then they're now gathering different characters.
Oh, cool.
That he's pulling on the side. He hasn't explained yet why he's stopping people from traveling on the road, and he's got to stop them from traveling both ways.
I tried making a movie like that once. It was everything took place inside one coffee shop, but it was like a murder that happened in a different place. But it wasn't very good, but, you know.
Well, not because it was set in a coffee shop.
Because I made it.
hinting at that, but didn't directly say it. But no,
you can't say that anything.
I was trying to be funny.
All right.
Which doesn't work that often for me, but anyway,
except for just there.
Except for just there. Right. No, I was going to say, generally I think that shows and movies that tend to have a smaller budget, if done correctly, are more effective than ones that have a bigger budget.
Well, if you look at
lower expectations or something?
No, not lower expectations. But
they have to work within that budget.
Yeah, exactly. That's
you
what I'm
thinking. You can compare like George Lucas, Star Wars A New Hope versus Phantom Menace, where George Lucas had a lot of budget constraints and
problems.
You know, other input from other people saying, no, don't do this or do that, versus one where he was basically given carte blanche look what he did with that.
Yeah, but that's also kind of special to him because he shouldn't have carte blanche.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of...
No, I don't think so, because if you look at Escape from New York, and if you listen to the director's, the special edition Escape from New York, which has commentary from John Carpenter, I highly recommend any John Carpenter film is to get one with a director's commentary. Because it's quite insightful, but he tells you how he had to work around all the budget cuts, or not budget cuts, but the budget constraints of Escape from New York. And it's quite clever what he does, because you wouldn't notice it, like the different tricks he did. But then if you look at Escape from L.A., which I believe he had a larger budget, and what did he do with it? He has Kirk Russell surfing on a tidal wave, or a tsunami. He's surfing on a tsunami. And if that's what you're going to do with the money, then no. Take it away from you.
Yeah.
Go back to or like Halloween. Made on a very small budget, so a lot of stuff you don't see.
I think that's maybe just the kind of movies I like.
Compared to Michael Bay, and look what he does with the money.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, but that's again, man, that's Michael
don't,
Bay.
Yeah, don't listen to the commentary on
it's
Transformers.
Still bad. You reduced your budget to $1 million, and it's still bad.
Yeah.
I don't know though, but like. Maybe it's within reason, because as far as Star Wars movies, maybe I think you disagree on this, but I think Return of the Jedi was better than A New Hope, and I think Empire was the best one of them all, in fact. But they had...
But I actually like budgets. Return of the Jedi. I just think New Hope was... Just because it kind of blows you away right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Where you got the ship coming in, and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So even when you get to Return of the, Empire Strikes Back, you already know what's going on, and we're talking about Star Wars again.
Yeah. I was thinking that. I'm like, when are we going to get away from this? All right.
Maybe we should just change the podcast about gaming and Star Wars.
Yeah.
All roads lead to Star Wars.
Your money back, if not at least one Star Wars reference per episode. That's the tagline. Fulfilling your daily Star Wars quota.
Long time ago in a land far away.
Yeah.
We got half of that anyway.
So as a palate cleanser, I decided to get some, going back to watching a lot of B-movies, decided to get some A movies.
Quote, unquote.
If you want to call The Expendables an A movie. Boy.
Which it was not.
No, it was not. And I'll say this, after watching like 8 B movies in a row, Expendables was still a bad movie. It was just boring. I actually wandered away from the TV about halfway through.
Wow.
And left it on, and then I wandered back. I could hear it, and all the gunshots.
All the explosions.
And explosions. And wandered back, and... I was like, oh, okay.
They're still shooting stuff.
The same stuff. From...
I really can't recommend it. It's not even a guilty pleasure.
Wow. Yeah, it's weird.
It's just guilty.
I heard a lot of people...
guilty of being bad. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I've only heard maybe one or two people say that it's actually good. I think the majority are just saying it was just that. It's a lot of explosions and a waste of time.
Yeah, and there's not even like... Anybody who's listened to the last episode when we talked about The Werewolf of Washington, where you actually would walk away from that movie talking a lot, perhaps making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne and I went and saw Jumper. I actually thought it was a decent movie. Wayne didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
And he talked longer about the movie than the movie actually was. So I think Wayne got... He got his money's worth. But I think he would just walk out of The Expendables and just say, oh, what'd you think? Me too. Like, there wasn't even, like, fodder
just
for conversation. Yeah. It's like they try to do, like, jokes and everyone falls flat.
Wow.
You would think, like, even with Jet Li, you're like, you know, I know it's not your first language, but you would think after making so many movies in English, you could deliver a line. Just one.
No. Yeah. Not even a one-liner?
Well, and even Dolph Lundgren, and I mean, Dolph Lundgren can speak English. You wouldn't know it from this movie.
How about Sylvester Stallone? Because he can speak English. Would you have known it from the movie?
Yeah, that's true. It's like the entire cast that doesn't speak English and had to like learn their lines phonetically and delivering them phonetically. It's like, Mickey Rourke? Who would have thought that was an English-speaking name? Nah. No, he's from somewhere else. So do not recommend that, even...
Not even for, like, picking up accents for NPCs.
I say if you... No, yeah. What accents would you pick up?
I don't know. I'm just trying to find some There's not even a tiny grain of redemption in that movie.
There's nothing. I mean, if you have, there's nothing on TV, then pick up a book. There's no book. Go for a walk. Walk your dog. Don't have a dog. Go out and buy it. That's how bad.
Wow. On what was it? Postcards from the Dungeon. They had what was it? The what was the host? Jim? Was it?
Jim ran the.
He ran like a card game that he based off.
No, Steve did.
It was Loom.
Yeah.
Loom, which is.
It
card
sounded really,
game.
Really interesting. I think he had a good point that it would have made a really good, like, game, like one shot kind of.
But I think he kind of mashed that up with 80s A Team.
No, that was the other guy.
Oh, that was
right. That was Jim.
All right. Can't
no.
Get your podcast host correct. You don't need to see the movie to get that plot.
I've seen a lot of the 80s. I really like old 80s action things, Predator, and all the Schwarzenegger things I really enjoyed. But yeah, this I don't think would do anything for me. Even the last one, was it
Predators?
Collateral Damage, I think it was called. The last Schwarzenegger one before he went to Governor. It was just horrible. It was just that kind of thing. There was no substance to it. Didn't see Predators yet.
That's not worth it either.
Nah, I didn't expect it.
It
was maybe about a year ago, but I rewatched Predator, and man, it's so good. It's a really enjoyable movie.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. It's weird. It's like
forgotten how to make movies.
Almost. It's action movies had, there was, it was a genre, it had something. There was a story that was very action-packed. It wasn't just the basic point of it wasn't to blow stuff up. You know what I'm saying?
They had, like, the larger-than-life people, like the actors, the action heroes.
Exactly. Like,
so I guess maybe the Expendables, like, they just look, like, old. Like, there's nobody to replace them. And then they bring in Jason Statham, the Transporter.
Yeah. But and the Transporter's a pretty good movie.
No, they are not.
I like them. They're terrible. Not they. No. The first one.
Okay, know. No, it is not.
I don't know if I've seen the first one.
Oh, it is.
I think I caught, like, it part of the Transporter 2 on TV.
What was the other one called? The one where I think it was called Crash, where he gets a poison and he has to keep his adrenaline level up.
I saw the trailer for that.
Yeah, oh, man. It's one of those that's really horrible but great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it is, like, a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I quite enjoyed that one.
But... Oh, okay.
But then again, like I said, I'll preface that with saying I really did like action, 80s action flicks.
And you also should preface that you like Transporter.
Yes.
So if you also enjoy Transporter. Yes, that one person.
There was something else you really liked that while, and I couldn't believe you liked it. I don't remember what it was, though.
There's probably a lot of films that
we've seen. I think we disagree a lot on movies.
Yeah. I think there was that one movie where it was a surprise. We both liked it.
Yeah.
What?
Really?
We both liked that? So, actually, Wayne was saying that in the 60s, they didn't have any action heroes.
Well, I was asking, did they?
Or he's asking, because you're planning to play a character that's a 1960s...
Actor.
Yeah. But like a action kind of guy, or a tough guy actor.
Yeah, I wanted to play a tough guy actor.
Known
basically.
For his, like, mostly mob roles somewhat his police roles.
Yeah.
Only because I didn't want to play kind of like a pretty boy actor. So I thought the other way to go is, okay, like, you know, kind of the tough, silent
guy. A Kurt Russell or a Burt Lancaster. But I would say that, they had action heroes. There's John Wayne. He's an action hero.
That's weird, though. Like, maybe I'm just looking at it from a different angle, but, like, if I think the 80s Schwarzenegger kind of role, he's an action hero. And I'm using air quotes again, because any movie he's going to be in is just a flat-out action movie.
But John Wayne pretty much did the same kinds of movies until he got older.
Mm-hmm.
And then around about True Grit or The Searchers, he started... I mean, he has to play his age.
Right.
Right now, like... you could argue, like, Sylvester Stallone in The Expendables not playing his age.
Did you hear Schwarzenegger announced he's going to go back to movies?
I heard that, yeah.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. But, like, when I think of John Wayne, and maybe it's just because I'm looking at his entire career, because it was a while ago, but I see him as playing roles in movies. I see him as, like, the cowboy, or as, like, the army sergeant or captain or whatever. And, I don't know, it seems like he played in... Western movies that were also very action-packed.
Right.
To me, I don't feel... I kind of feel that the action genre in and of itself is a newer thing.
So, like, tied to the... around about the 80s when there's a big budget.
Yeah, I think
so. What would you say what would be the first action movie?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'd have to do research.
Yeah, I'd have to look into that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have an answer yet.
So would you classify then those 60s movies with, like, John Wayne and really, would those be, like, hero movies?
They were tough guy actors, though.
Oh, absolutely. Because I think tough guy is a better...
Burt Lancaster was known as, like, the tough guy actor.
Absolutely.
Because then they made that movie perhaps in the 80s called Tough Guys or something like that. And it was kind of playing on their personas.
Absolutely. And I think actually there might even be a difference between like an action hero and a tough guy.
Okay.
Because there's tough guy I picture Clint Eastwood.
As a tough guy.
Tough guy. Because in his movies, he gets beat up, but it's still very realistic. You know, there's no enormous explosions that more characterize like the Stallone Schwarzenegger kind of genre. At least in my opinion.
Okay, if you want to parse them so you have tough guys and action heroes, I can see that.
Maybe
I could see that.
Cause,
but... No, I agree, because tough guy is more like, yeah, the guy takes a beating, and he's still going.
Predators, Schwarzenegger took a beating, he still went.
Yeah, but to use Chris's, then there's also lots of explosions and...
Dirty Harry had the .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world.
Yes, but did he have a plasma cannon on his shoulder?
Where did that come from?
From Predator. Just about the same thing. Right. The explosions, the guns.
Well, but if you want to go that far, did Dirty Harry have the Predator? The answer is no. That's why he didn't have the plasma cannon.
I think we can all agree Dirty Harry is not Predator.
Were you keeping track, tough guy? That's my Predator impression, by the way. I think I peaked the mic.
Anyway,
what are we talking about now that we're 20 minutes in?
Oh, we're actually going to talk about mashups.
Cool. Mm.
So,
kind of like
for
Western
example, tough guys
Predator.
And action movies.
Yeah, but Dirty Harry, Predator, put them together. Dirty Predator.
That just sounds wrong. Dirty Predator.
Actually, does. Oh,
this is an entire another genre for that one.
Why are we watching a pedophile movie?
Oh, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Sorry, I ran to Dirty Predator. I thought it was a Dirty Harry Predator mashup. Sure, that's what you thought.
Oh, man. So, mashups, but not those kind.
Right. People are familiar with mashups and the concepts, so we're gonna see how it goes. So, if it's this episode works, we might do some more mashups in the future. But what we'd like to do is, every time we do a mashup, we do it in a different way. So this way is going to be the twist.
Yep.
And we have a list of 20 settings. And the reason why we capped it at 20 is because we only the biggest dice or die we have is 20-sided. And we have 20 twists. And what we'll do is we'll roll the die for settings and then roll the die for twist. And then we'll try to mash those up. And to see if we can come up with something that would be...
An interesting setting to play in.
To play in, yeah. And that would be the operative word, play. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to come up with a new movie genre or a new movie story. We're trying to think of a game setting.
Yeah.
So some questions that we would be considering is, what's the world like?
Yep.
What stories would you tell with this world? What would the who are the PCs? And what would the PCs do in this world?
Yeah, what would their roles be?
Yeah, what would their roles be? Yeah. And what would they do?
Great.
All right, so without further ado, let's get started.
Alrighty, cool. Roll that beautiful die.
Yep.
Yeah, I love those big things.
Man. Ooh, 10.
What's 10. So 10 is feudal Japan. Oh, that's fitting.
Yeah,
that's fitting.
Perfect. No one's going to believe that actually came up on the die.
Yeah, I know. That is number 10. I mean...
Oh, this is just telling itself.
All right.
Yeah. All right, and now for the twist. So feudal Japan, how we vision it, sure, you could think of different eras, like the Heian period or the Sengoku period or the Tokugawa period. We're just going to mash them, like feudal, like samurais, daimyos, shoguns.
Kind of like we said in the original episode. Kind of
that we asked everyone to skip past.
Didn't we? All right,
yes,
sorry.
We did, because of the bad sound quality.
Okay, fine. Then the kind of stereotypical feudal Japan. No? Okay.
Great, yes. Next one.
And the twist.
Ooh, two.
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 Sudden collapse. Hmm. Sudden collapse. Now, the twists, some of them are more specific than others, so the more general ones are designed to be like, what would we do with that? So first we should kind of think, what would we do with a sudden collapse? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does the technology collapse? Feudal Japan?
Not a lot of technology. Where do they go back to? Where do they go back to? Stone Age?
I think now people are really going to believe that we actually rolled this.
Well, no, actually, that works very well, because feudal Japan was, especially if you're talking like the Tokugawa period, that was a very, very structured, rule-driven society. And, to drop that out to the samurai code of honor, maybe, collapsing.
I didn't see it so much as the samurai code collapsing. That's a suggestion,
thought,
right? I was thinking more just like the government itself just collapses, like the emperor.
Well, just before the Tokugawa, there's like the civil war. would we just be kind of backing up to when there's a civil war and different lords are fighting? So let's try to...
One of the things that's famous about Japan is that they've never had a major social revolution. So how about something like that, the social collapse?
You mean, but that would be collapse into what, anarchy?
No, maybe a reversal. The feudal system in Japan, I suppose we chose feudal as the setting, but what if the whole feudal system collapsed if it was a reversal? Maybe the peasantry took over, or a democracy began, or something like that.
I actually saw that more as a... I guess, again, maybe splitting hairs, but I see that as building something rather than something collapsing.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm right, but...
Then how about a Bolshevik revolution?
What?
In...
I was distracted by the face you were making. Sorry. It kind of freaked me out, but...
To go from Imperial Russia into Communist Russia.
Yeah, again, but I realized things had to collapse for that to happen, but I still kind of see that
so
as
an apocalypse kind of thing.
No. I think replacing the government with another government to me symbolizes building something, mm-hmm. even if there has to be a collapse first. I don't see that as part of the collapse.
Okay.
Well, there's. What if somebody collapsed, like a person suddenly collapsed. And died. You think about the one man theory in history. Like there's different, and certainly the Japanese, when they look at their history, they've got those three people, the three unifiers. What if one of them collapsed?
Then or one of would come. It's like a feudal world. There's not much in the way of technology, so a societal collapse. People are still largely self sufficient. You know, they still grow their own food.
Didn't you recommend?
Sorry.
Didn't you recommend a societal collapse?
Oh, and it works great in a modern setting, but in a feudal one, I don't really see there being that much of a change.
What about when they were defending against the Mongolians, when the Mongolians were invading them, and there was the typhoons that saved them? But what if the, especially in the second invasion, if they the defense collapsed suddenly, and the Mongolians swept through and took over a large portion of Japan?
So that's fun. I like that. And then maybe the samurai resistance.
Yes, something like that. So instead of having a very... But, I mean, that also plays into the sudden collapse of society or the breakdown. Mm-hmm. But they're actually trying to restore the old order. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to get rid of the invaders.
But, okay.
Yeah, I think... it's kind of a tough one to do. The collapse.
Well, we rolled it.
I know we rolled it. I'm not advocating rolling again. I'm just saying...
Well, this one's too hard.
I'm just saying, like...
And there goes mashups.
I wanted a steampunk feudal Japan.
Yeah.
Can't we roll together?
Can't we roll again? Can't, like, the old D&D systems. Yeah, the old D&D systems. Just roll until you
18.
Get the one you want. Yeah, all three. All your stats are 18. Yeah. Anyway, I guess if you look at it that way, sort of sudden collapse could kind of lead into almost anything.
Well, that's why it's deliberately vague.
Yeah, I realize that. I guess maybe I was focusing more on the collapse part.
Which is very vague or ambiguous. No,
so when you hear collapse, then what can you think of for an example?
Because I was even saying it could have been one of the individuals collapses and it becomes an alternate history.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess I was sort of looking at it in terms of time. Because from my perspective, the things both you guys have suggested is kind of like the major event is finished, and now we're either trying to...
Okay,
fair enough. I saw it as like this event has just happened, whatever caused this collapse, and so things are essentially falling down around people.
Right.
In terms of like a societal collapse, right?
Well, the sudden collapse was the defense on the beaches.
Right. Okay.
When you talk about the invasion, so the Mongolians get a beachhead, sufficient beachhead, and it doesn't matter if the typhoon comes and destroys most of the navy because they've landed most of the force, so they're able to sweep through. But it's not... I mean, you could do it where they've completely taken over and you're resistance fighters, or you could do that it's now like the islands are divided in half. So they... Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Sudden collapse. Part of the island sinks.
Oh, so the
That's
island
a pretty
sinks.
Big collapse, yeah.
That's a big collapse.
All right, so there's big,
I'm not
big
saying
earthquake
that's what we have
and
to
then
do,
stuff
but
falls into the ocean, right?
I just thought, look at this, as soon as you said island, I'm just like, oh, well, collapse.
Okay, and what would they do with that?
Because
again, it gets into it in the feudal society, it's like, oh, wow, we lost a lot of people.
Mm.
We weren't really that interconnected. We were growing the food that we needed to eat.
Especially in a feudal system.
A feudal system.
Sorry. in a feudal system, because there are the, kind of the separate kingdoms there. You know, half these kingdoms are missing, but they, you know, there were strict borders between them. Oftentimes, there are warring states. Hmm. So,
well, off the top of my head, okay, what if the main island of Japan collapsed, and then you're only then you're only left with what?
Kyushu, Shikoku, Hokkaido.
I was thinking Hokkaido and
Okinawa's.
Yeah.
What?
And then,
so you're saying three of the four major islands collapsed.
All right.
Well, in that case, so if you're talking in a feudal era, there's enough distance by sea that they become separate nations.
That's where I was going. And
that
then,
said, in feudal Japan, they already were separate nations.
Oh, I forgot we had to stay in feudal Japan. The whole point of the setting, alright.
And the bullet trains don't work anymore.
That's what I was thinking, right? Yeah. Then I think
all
you essentially have
can't
two...
get internet access on the Blackberries.
All right.
Well, how would they deal with that? I don't know. How did they deal with it in feudal Japan?
Yeah, I guess it does.
So I'm just picturing Samurai playing with his iPhone. It won't work.
So I guess it doesn't work all that well.
Okay, so...
Well, okay, go ahead, Wayne.
You said people collapse. What if everybody...
Well, do you guys understand that? Because maybe I don't think I explained that.
No,
like, collapse, like...
A ruler suddenly dies.
Yeah, ruler's... Okay, that's so you didn't understand that.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. So what if just everybody... Yeah,
or maybe he tripped.
Yeah. He's on a very poorly built roof. I was thinking, what if just everybody in the royal palace just collapsed?
Yeah, I mean...
The royal palace, it would have no effect.
All right, fine.
Because the emperor really didn't control anything in feudal Japan.
Oh, okay. Or that
takes a while. It would take a while for them to notice.
You know, there's actually a Japanese TV show that did that recently. It was a miniseries, I think, where the entire ruling shogunate, all the men died, so the women took over, and it was kind of a take of a matriarchal feudal Japan. It was very interesting. But
well, you could do that, or kind of something similar, just. It almost gets a little bit in terms of, like, invasion or plague, but what if just a whole bunch of people just keel over all at once for no apparent reason?
Mm-hmm.
That's also a literal sudden collapse.
That'd be very interesting if, say, the warrior class and all the samurai and all the daimyos went and it was just the farmers left.
Hmm.
But you could just do it instead of... I mean, sure, you could do it where a bunch of men die,
mm-hmm.
and then you make it, like, a matriarchal society. That might be okay... But you might just end up playing female samurai and female ninjas or whatever. But what if, you could do it almost like a mystery game.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe people wouldn't normally associate like a mystery game in feudal Japan. But if a bunch of people die, and I'm kind of thinking of those Rapture movies, those Left Behind, those books, where a bunch of people just disappear off the planet. And what if you do that in feudal Japan? So they don't have a Christian... belief system.
Mm.
And I don't believe they have any belief system associated with some sort of Armageddon or...
Not to my knowledge. Either.
Yeah, or Ragnarok. But just people just suddenly just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be from all walks of life. Or you could take out an entire social class and then try to figure out what you would do.
Mm.
But if you take out the samurai, then I think people would just rush in to try to fill in that vacuum. And if you get rid of all the Edda, the low class, I think in a gaming setting, people mm-hmm. aren't going to notice.
Yeah.
Right.
But just that's the thing, is like suddenly like 50% or 70% of the people just die.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if you did that on a more limited scale,
yeah.
So maybe 50, maybe we'll say even more than that, maybe 99% of the warrior class in one specific kingdom, we'll say Hyogo, because that's where we're at, die all of a sudden. So the surrounding kingdoms still have their armies, and of course they'd want to come in. Players could play the remaining warrior class. They have to figure out what happened. They have to figure out if or how they can defend their kingdom. Something like that.
Can I change it then?
Oh,
instead of just like in Hyogo
mm-hmm.
or a kingdom in Japan, but you could set it, and it gets, you know, I'm not trying to like force Mongolians on you, but it happens. The fleet is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the collapse of the warriors. So then people have to rush in to fill in that vacuum or something. Like, they lose a lot of people at that time in feudal Japan.
Hmm. I think it'd be even better if it was right before that time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The fleet's
coming.
The fleet's coming. And then...
Yeah.
And then it might be... I don't know about, like, how... Because we're very much tying this to specific time, so I don't know if this is going to be a great setting that you could play... like a massive campaign, mm. but definitely like at that time you play this game because it kind of has like a clock. Mm-hmm. Can you figure things out? Maybe the warriors are hidden. I don't know. Like they just disappeared. Doesn't mean they all died or there's corpses, but they just disappeared.
Yeah.
So maybe it could be finding them in time, or it could be replacing them, mm-hmm. or different things like that. But yeah, you have a kind of like that game clock. You know that the Mongolians are building the fleet in mm-hmm. Korea and they're going to cross.
Yeah.
And then maybe the game could continue when they do cross and they do land. And is it going to be the ragtag group?
Resistance fighters?
Resistance fighters, farmers, and that.
I guess if you did that, you'd either have to have the players sort of not metagame the knowledge that these typhoons will save Japan, or you have to erase the typhoons from
the story. Never make that clear. You know, maybe the typhoons will come, maybe they won't.
Maybe there are no typhoons. I mean, you can control the world.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
All right. So we seem to have some consensus. So basically, feudal Japan and a large percentage of the warrior caste has just disappeared for no reason. So we basically made this a mystery game with kind of like impending doom because it's set in the 12th, 13th, or 13th century.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mongolians are coming.
So only the warrior class is gone.
Yeah.
So the merchant class, ruling class.
What do you mean by ruling class? Just the imperial courts and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, like the daimyos and such.
That might be interesting to see if like okay, now man up. You've been your family was way back when perhaps part of the warrior class, but you've devolved.
Exactly.
So then you've got the dilettantes, courtesans, and that who have to
find out what happened or fight.
Yeah. And then they've got to, that might be made for a very interesting clash because then they can't kind of look down upon the merchant class. Or they can,
mm-hmm.
but they all got to learn to be warriors together.
Right.
So that would certainly be different from your average game where everybody plays, I will play like a more rogue or merchant and I will play this or that. I will play the warrior, but here you got everybody. Nobody is a warrior, but everybody's got to be a warrior. So it's kind of like if you look at D&D rules, you multi-class. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to have start from somewhere else, but you all got to reach warrior.
That's pretty cool.
If you have point buy system is basically build your non-warrior. You can't buy anything warrior. Now you got to learn.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. Add to that,
ninja, because it's a game. So there's going to be ninja players out there.
Well, I think would it depend. It would depend. Would you count ninjas as part of like the warrior caste,
or the warrior monks too?
Yeah,
because they were pretty big during.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, that could be up to. That could be up to the GM and the players. I mean, you want to?
If you're talking political classes, then no, they weren't warrior classes, but they were fighters. Warriors,
yeah, that's what I mean. Like, do you want to expand it to kind of like all warriors?
I'd say include the warrior monks as they've disappeared as well.
I would say keep them. I would say keep both the ninja and the warrior monks.
Of course you
would. You want clash on the every episode, and then you shut people down when there isn't.
What was I saying? Oh, yeah. No, I'd say because the ninja specifically, you know, they were looked to as kind of like shady bad guys. You know, even the peasantry saw them as pretty evil characters. So if now they're maybe the more experienced or the most experienced warriors left in the country, people would have to maybe search them out and use them to learn from as mentors.
Yeah, sure. No, that's why I didn't say.
And the same deal with the warrior monks. But
I'm going to disagree.
The public perception of them was different than from ninja.
Right.
Which is why I thought that'd become kind of interesting.
I see the warrior monks as having almost as much or as much temporal power as the samurai class.
They did in the later periods.
I think it waxed and waned.
Mm.
But I see them as too similar. Huh. And I would think, again, I'm kind of thinking about this as players. If you think about what would players do, they would all gravitate to warrior monks.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to be a ninja. I'm going to be the ninja too.
I would say
I see the ninjas having a lot of inherent.
Because I really like that idea that you have start with like a farmer template, but you have to build towards warrior. So I'd say keep those elements, the warrior monks and the ninjas there, but don't let the players.
Yeah, but I think. I
see it working with the ninjas because the ninjas have all that downside to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about if you maybe put a little bit of a twist on the warrior monks?
I think the warrior monks would just take over.
What if that's part of it? Maybe they're trying to take over. Maybe they're trying to build.
Yeah, but then
maybe make them the bad guys.
Exactly.
Okay, well, you're not saying that. I'm talking about PC.
Maybe because you didn't let him make his point.
I let him make his point. He went off on ninjas for a while.
All right, so get to your point faster.
Yeah, I guess.
No, you're not turning this on me.
Back to warrior monks.
All right. I say as bad guys.
And I agree. I think maybe I'm trying to start like a theocratic...
I think we know what the story then is. What would you tell? We're talking about...
The mystery
we're trying to find and trying to replace. Mm-hmm. Who would the PCs be? We're thinking the Imperial Court. We're thinking about the courtiers or the dilettantes, the poets.
I'd say to take different classes. Mix merchants. In a daimyo with a farmer and a merchant.
Daimyo would be a warrior.
Well, he was a top warrior, but the daimyos were still, they'd sit in chairs and move troops around. They were generals.
But they're still warriors because you have some pretty badass stories, like with a guy sitting on his camp stool, and he's attacked, Takeda Shingen, and he's attacked by his rival, I forget his name, and he doesn't even sit up from his camp stool and just holds him off.
Wow.
So that's pretty badass. I think he might have even held him off with his war fan, so cool. That was pretty cool. So I'm actually going to be pretty firm on this, is the daimyos would go.
Okay.
Because they are the warriors. They're just the top warriors. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why they got up there, because they're brilliant strategists. I mean, it would basically, if you let somebody be a daimyo, then he would just be bossing people around. It would kind of break down like a military campaign can if the players all are on board. But I do like about having like the nobility, the ones that are kind of tied to the imperial court. That's really good because they don't have, they have the courtly skills, but they're kind of thrown into the same situation with that big strapping farmer. Or maybe even not the warrior monk, but if we can tweak it a bit and just like kind of the more peaceful pacifist monks, that would be good as well.
Absolutely.
But not the full on warrior monks. You could tweak this up. Maybe the monks lost all of their hardcore warriors as well.
I really like the idea of having them as the bad guys. Maybe don't make it apparent at the beginning of the campaign.
Or if you have the bad guys, then the pacifist monks can be the PCs.
I agree. Cool.
All right, so we have who the PCs would be and what they would do. So the final thing is, what system do you recommend?
Legend of the Five Rings.
I'm thinking.
I know it sounds overly apparent, but it's just kind of...
I think maybe I'm just kind of reacting because it's too obvious.
Yeah, trying to find something else that's not as
obvious. I know what
you're
saying, like, when I first thought of it, too, is kind of, is there something else? But,
I would put forth... No, I wouldn't.
All right.
Okay.
No, I wouldn't.
One of the other reasons that Legend of the Five Rings.
What I wasn't going to put forward
was what?
D&D 3.5.
I was actually thinking
because of the multi-classing, but then I think you'd have to. What? Who would you basically let them start with? Rogues?
But they have they had.
Or the old NPC class?
Yeah, the NPC. The farmer.
The adept.
Yeah, but who wants to do that? I mean, they had like a D4
well,
for
the
a hit.
Nobody wants to start off that way. Everybody wants to start as the samurai, but you don't get to.
But unless you said you couldn't take a level of fighter at a certain thing, then
actually,
I think people would just go, okay.
That's not a bad idea.
One level of adept and second level fighter.
Yeah. I don't know how Legend of the Five Rings works as far as a level system, but I think D&D would be really good for that because you show this constant progression.
There actually is a
D20.
There's actually a D&D L5R because they're Oriental Adventures for... Yeah. Third edition was tied to L5R.
Okay.
So since we're kind of leaning the D&D way, if you're doing Feudal Japan, I suppose that would mean magic would be out as well.
Because
who would the player start with? Well, I choose wizard.
Didn't think of that.
There's no magic in this one.
Which is fine, though. I have no problem with that.
But then, you get into things like druid or...
Some druids.
That would be magic.
Yeah, I realize that. So kind of like, what I'm saying is kind of like, why use D&D or just say, okay, you can be rogue.
Fighter, monk.
Well, you can't be fighter. Not at the beginning.
Oh, sorry. Well, you can't be rogue.
All right. Then I change my mind. I go GURPS.
I think maybe a universal system would be good for that.
A universal point buy system.
Yeah, I was going to say point buy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's pure point buy.
Yeah.
And you can do anything with it. And yeah. So they could basically build... You kind of lay out all the things. They could make the ultimate noble.
Mm-hmm.
and then they would have to earn the points, and then it allows for a more slow evolution mm-hmm. of the character.
Definitely.
Because you're adding little bits and pieces.
Yeah, I think that the point buy would actually be better than the level system, because as soon as you get a level of fighter, bam, you can fight.
Oh, I can use all these weapons now. Yeah. Didn't think of that.
Depending on what kind of flavor you want to give to it, you could also use World of Darkness as well.
Well, it's kind of like a point.
I'm not a big fan of that system. Downside, like using Dark Ages as a base. Yeah, sure. I would.
It depends if you want to make a darker version of it or not.
I don't think you'd have to be dark or not dark. I still would lean towards GURPS.
Like we said at the end of the old system review ones about World of Darkness, it's just that when the percentage chance on the dice is much lower, so it's a harder system to quote unquote win in. Than say GURPS is.
GURPS is pretty deadly.
I haven't played.
From what I've heard, GURPS is very deadly.
Difference between being deadly and being difficult. How well do you hit? How well do you shoot versus?
Yeah, but if you're
anyway, we're arguing system now. Not a big deal.
But. Well, no, but I was just gonna say like if your goal is to eventually have these people fight.
Mm-hmm. Actually, GURPS has a Japan book. I think perhaps you could get it on their
download site
as a PDF, perhaps. But they used to have a book for the second edition.
Backtracking a little
called
bit,
Japan.
L5R would also be good because it has good mass combat rules, which is if the Mongolians eventually arrive.
Yeah, what's that called?
I don't remember. Mm-hmm.
I have it. Clan War.
Mm-hmm. You would have to strip magic out of L5R.
But I'm also pretty sure that there's a mass combat system for GURPS, too. There's got to be.
Probably. My point I was going to make with GURPS is like if combat is so dangerous and deadly, if you eventually want these people to fight, like one shot to something and they're out, then that kind of defeats the purpose, you know?
Yeah, and then start over with a new farmer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
sounds good. So we got that. Maybe two votes for GURPS, one vote back for L5R.
No, I agree that GURPS is good, but I think maybe with some twists from L5R, yeah.
I think my vote would just be for,
And just for the magic, system. I think, I don't know, maybe that is. Because if somebody, you know, if all these warriors suddenly disappear,
then
magic's in the world, maybe.
Yeah.
And perhaps that becomes an option for the players, but certainly not to start, because, I agree with Wayne. Okay, I'll be the wizard then.
Well, that's going to be really easy, all right?
Well, the farmers become even more irrelevant. But I'm glad I spent all those things. All right, so now we're going to do another setting with a twist. So let's do the twist. Oh, maybe I'll do that before. Let's do the setting.
Yeah, all right, setting comes first.
One. Oh, the Hyperion Age.
Hyborian Age.
Yeah,
Hyperion. You wrote that. You want to explain what that one is?
Yeah, it doesn't mean I could read it. it's the Conan, Conan world. So basically, their premise is like a pre-Atlantis world. So it's the dawn of civilization world.
Where magic is kind of only reserved for evil people.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. All right, now let's do the twist. Six. Powers.
Powers refers to any kind of superpowers, magic powers, psychic powers.
We weren't going to do magic. It's like psychic or super.
Oh, okay.
Even though some superhero superpower is apparently magic.
Well, you know.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Doctor Strange, yeah.
So I imagine
Hyborian Age and
Hyborian
powers.
Age, and there's this one guy who's really, really, really strong.
I'm seeing the flaw here. Yeah?
Well, remember, all right, nothing.
Well, the Hyborian Age is pretty dystopian in its flavor. It's pretty dark.
It's a very dark setting. Mm-hmm.
And I think
let's talk about the setting. Okay, let's talk it out. Which is what you were doing, probably.
Yeah.
You actually probably know.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, you probably know better than I do. I haven't read through the comics, so by all means.
I thought there were novels first.
Yeah, I read through the
novels. I haven't read those either, so.
Okay, all right.
I read the comics when I was a kid, then I graduated to the books.
Ooh, and then where did the movies come in?
No, in between.
Conan and the movie. Oh.
In between.
Once again, audio does not translate the look just Lyle just gave me.
It's really important to know, thanks.
Yeah, like Wayne said, magic is pretty rare. It can be quite powerful, but those kind of things would take a long time to set up. Mm-hmm. Generally, it's viewed as quite evil, and it's very fairly low tech, primitive world. Although the kingdoms vary in technology, there's not a lot of dragons or like you're having like one ape that would be, that was part of one story. It was just like a massive ape fighting Conan. Gorilla, gorilla.
Sounds like a King Kong kind of story.
No, I don't think that massive.
No, he wasn't that big. He was like, he was about the same size as a normal gorilla. And just playing with that, or like a, like the elephant god, or the, so there's not a lot of fantastic creatures in the world. So it is low fantasy, I guess, is what it is. But yeah, there's great heroes such as Conan. But Conan is still limited, but he's just a very strong, regular guy.
Right.
Who's pretty cunning and good with the sword.
So I guess kind of like we did in the religion episode, in that setting, wouldn't people with those powers kind of be seen as gods then? Isn't that a way you could go?
Well, that's the question with powers. Do a lot of people have the powers, or do some people have the powers? My concern with the some people having the powers, we might just be doing another of their magic. So there's like sorcerers. Are we making white wizards who have psychic powers, or are they just like, okay, we have evil sorcerers and evil psychics?
The thing that sprung to mind first, and I don't know if it's a good idea or not, what I was saying is it's a very dark world. And at least from the Conan movies, that's what I'm most familiar with. They had
Conan the Barbarian is pretty... captures the flavor of the novels.
Absolutely. And
Conan the Destroyer? Yes.
The Thulsa Doom, was that it?
Yep.
He was very powerful. He basically ran an entire country for that. Now I would
the
maybe,
power of flesh.
I would maybe set it up as kind of these dark magicians. They are evil. And they have all the power. Maybe they control the entire world. And the people with powers are maybe in some kind of uprising. So I'd say very few, maybe even just the PCs in a game.
I'm just thinking how that would work.
I'm thinking it's sounding like Dark Sun.
Okay.
Because you have the Sorcerer, the Dragon Kings. Mm-hmm. And the
Spoilers.
And the Spoilers just raping the environment to fuel their magic. Whereas... there's a lot of psychic power, so the players all have like psychic powers. Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, like,
awesome. Then I had a great idea.
That was a fantastic idea.
Called Dark Sun.
Yeah. So and we call it Dark Moon. No. Like
Sun Dark. Sun Dark. No, I was just thinking, like, if only the PCs or a very small group of people had the powers, then really, who would? I don't know. I think it would be kind of boring because who would the antagonist be other than those bad guys you've set up? They couldn't really... Well, it could be interesting, not to steal Lyle's word, but they couldn't really interact with anyone equally apart from themselves.
But that fits a lot of genres. I mean, Gandalf versus a regular guy. I mean,
yeah, but the heroes of the story, kind of the main people of the story, are just kind of like regular people, not Gandalf, I would argue, which... maybe splitting hairs, and Lyle wants to say something.
Sorry. No, I was listening. I'm actually borrowing a little bit from, I think it was the first fantasy hero that Robert E. Howard wrote, Call? Mm-hmm. And he predates Conan. But in Call, you know the serpent men, the conspiracy like the serpent? Mm-hmm. You know those conspiracies or those fantasy settings where they have like a serpent race that used to... at one time enslaved people.
Okay.
I'm not really familiar, but...
okay, but I don't know if that was the first time that was introduced, but it certainly was brought up in Call. And at one point, like, there was a serpent race, like, in ancient history, like, prehistoric history. And the humans were their slaves. And then they break away, and then they're kind of in the shadows.
So a rebellion kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm wondering... one thing we associate with reptiles and that is that they live a long time. Mm-hmm. Like tortoise, turtles.
Yeah, I didn't disagree.
Yeah, living longer than mammals. So let's say that they live so long that they're like master swordsmen or master mages and that. And humans just don't live long enough to...
Reach that level of
swordsmanship, or they can't even learn magic because it takes so long. Mm-hmm. So that's why magic is so rare. You have to make pacts with the devil if you, Hyberian Age. And let's say that they've escaped from the serpents and they're on different continents. So the Hyberian Age is that one continent, and I believe there's other continents in that world. Maybe Lemuria is a different continent on that world. And they escaped because of, like, certain individuals were given powers or somehow like there's a formula or something, and they were able to maybe live a longer time, so they could basically learn and match that. So they have these long-lived mortals, or now they're immortals. Oh, I guess I'm bringing up Highlander. But anyway, they separate, and now there's this human kingdom, and you still have these power people, and the serpents have found them. So the serpent people still have humans enslaved. I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but let's say some of the humans escaped, and then they established all these kingdoms, and it happened so long ago. And now, and the ocean is vast, and it's basically separated the old serpent kingdom with enslaved humans, and this new kingdom that's developed where you've got magic still rare, but people have found ways to make deals, and now they're always worried about the serpents coming to invade them, but it's been like millennia.
Oh, that'd be really
so they've
cool.
forgotten about the serpents,
yeah, it's
and
like
now they've
men kind of stories.
And then something comes. Like a ship sails, and maybe it's more escaped slaves, like escaped like thousands of years after the initial slaves escaped and established all these kingdoms. And they're like, oh, they're still here. And they're like, oh, that's why we have all these broken watchtowers on the coast, because
you know
what
would be really
serpent,
fun,
yeah.
too, is if those, say, immortal escaped slaves were still around, but maybe they'd gone into hiding.
No, I think what Lyle means is the escaped slaves actually started the human continent.
Right. Are they still around?
No, but he's saying, Chris is talking about, like, they had to have, like, some edge, and they had these great heroes.
Oh, yeah, I thought
and
the
maybe
heroes
they're
still,
still
there.
Around.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh,
or
immortal.
Maybe, yeah.
You mean the individual heroes
or
themselves?
Or if not immortal,
the
then they have descendants. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking descendants, and that's where you get the superpowers from.
I was thinking more hidden. Like, maybe they did have descendants, but maybe they come again when the serpents arise. You're looking for a high-powered campaign.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of Wheel of Time. Again, you didn't get to it, but. There was kind of this, at one time, this sort of human army sailed across this massive ocean to deal with a threat on the other side.
Yeah.
And in the second book, exactly that's what happens. Now you have these two completely separate cultures.
Yeah.
People on the mainland, they have these legends, but everybody's kind of forgotten and said, oh no, those people are boogeymen, right? Mm-hmm. They don't really exist. And in the second book, the people actually sail back. With sort of these, like, you know, new creatures, and the invader said, no, this is our homeland, right? We're coming back. You should all worship us, because when they left, they were the ruling class. They were part of this empire, which has since broken apart. And, you know, they're just like, you guys here, you're essentially squatting on our land, and we've come to reclaim you.
That's really interesting. And, like, mixing that with your ideal, Lyle, to say maybe the serpents are there and they were the rulers, but they disappeared, they left, whatever, and now they're back. I suppose it doesn't have that much connection with Hyborian Age, but still.
Another twist in this,
I might be adding too much, but maybe these
immortals actually became bad. So the immortals maybe are still over in the other continent, and they've formed like these kind of immortal kingdoms, and they've basically enslaved people as well. So the people that are in the Hyborian Age, they've completely escaped. And they get like a watered down, because then maybe there's like this alchemists, this hidden society of alchemists that have, well, we've fixed the formula. You won't be driven insane like the immortals or something like that. So then you actually have two different kingdoms.
Yeah. Or familial split, like Chris said, their descendants escaped.
Oh, yeah.
Or the original powered ones.
And it gets diluted as the generations.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're still, they're basically, you could even say Conan. Conan had a thing. That they refer to, like, they call it the Red Mist, and I'm wondering if this is where D&D gets its barbarians have the rage ability.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they got it from the Berserkers as well. But basically, when he's fighting, sometimes he just sees red. He calls it the Red Mist. And maybe that just happens to be his power. He gets this, like, the Red Mist, and maybe there's other people that get the Red Mist as well. But then other people have different, like, just really minor tweaked powers.
I kind of like the descendants.
Yeah.
Because then you could have these different individual power people, right? Sort of like essentially gods, I guess, who all had a different certain power. And then their descendants have a watered-down version of that power. That's where you get the different special powers from.
Yeah.
You have power X because you're a descendant of this guy.
Well, we were talking about... I think it was last episode, although it was about werewolves. We did mention about vampires. But you have, like, the vampires of legend have, like, 20 different powers. Whereas, and if you look in... Or maybe it was when we talked about Vampire Requiem. But they've actually broken that down.
Right.
So that's kind of it is. So they have these super immortals that are still kind of fighting the Serpent Kingdoms, but it's no longer to liberate mankind. It's just to get more power.
Right.
And so they're insane. But maybe some of them are good, because they are still kind of human.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of have that option is, do we try to find a good one of these immortals and enlist them? So there could be a little bit of intrigue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking a real cool thing is, like, one of the immortals is on a horse with a... And he's got one of those lizard men, and the lizard man is just like a master swordsman.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe he's got like a master spear or a spear or something, and then the immortal just charges him. And of course, the lizard man, he's still better because he's immortal as well. Mm-hmm. But he's immortal in the sense that he's got a long life,
mm-hmm.
or they don't die of natural causes. And he impales the immortal, and the immortal just crawls up, crawls up the spear, crawls up the lance, and then cuts off his head.
Cool.
Yeah. Because it'll heal. I don't know. So that'd be good. So what do we have? We have definitely the Hyperion continent is pretty much unchanged,
mm-hmm.
except there's now these descendants, and Conan is one of these descendants, which explains why he's so great.
Yeah.
He's open because he's unaware of it.
Mm-hmm. I'd say make the whole party like that, unaware, and have this being an appearance like midway through. That is the twist.
All we've done is set up these broken watchtowers.
Mm-hmm.
On the West Coast, and people have just forgotten why the watch. They don't even have anybody manning these watchtowers because it's been thousands and thousands of years ago.
It's a low enough tech setting that it's really easy to just make kind of these vocal traditions that are spread around.
Yeah, and then they just some people, you know, they call it the Red Mist where Conan's from,
mm-hmm.
and in some places that maybe they worship them as like Tulsa Doom,
mm-hmm.
you know. Or in other cases, they killed them very early as soon as they get the power. That's evil. For some reason, we know that any power is evil.
Yeah, or like they're driven out of society, like Conan's sorcerer friend in the movie.
Yes, that's right. And maybe you could even have, like, he's actually a mage. He doesn't have this special power,
mm-hmm.
but they make these deals with the spirit realm. So this is something that humans have learned. It's kind of a shortcut to magic.
Yeah.
So then they have to kind of get these, like, crazy hermits and crazy necromancers.
Mm-hmm.
And try to enlist them. So then that part is open for the players as well. These outcasts. And then magic is still very... They could do... Their power is tenfold mm-hmm. of the other players, but it could backfire tenfold.
Mm-hmm. Comes at a big cost.
Yeah. Comes at a big cost, yeah. And then on the other side of the ocean are the Serpent Kingdoms, which have enslaved all these humans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Immortals, who... the previous heroes, but they've also enslaved all these humans because they've gone crazy. And then what do you do with these immortals? Do you try to touch base and then connect with them, or do you basically just have these two
bad
guys?
I'd make a great sandbox campaign, too, to just, like, let people loose in that kind of world.
Yeah. And then, of course, if they discover that there's the old kingdoms and the serpent people, we never forgot. We're just trying to kill them. And maybe you need the immortals because if the... serpent people never forget, or sorry, not never forget, but live a long time.
Why
less likely? Yeah, why haven't
why
they?
Why didn't they come over?
Yeah.
And the reason is because the immortals are still there fighting. Mm-hmm. The old liberators have just become new despots, new tyrants.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we're going to get to you soon, but they haven't broken their like kind of Cold War, their stalemate.
Yeah.
So they're both trying to break the stalemate so they can go take the old ex-slaves. All right.
Wouldn't that also have been the same thing? And so like, you guys behind us, you're little gnats compared to the Serpent Kingdoms over here.
Yeah, exactly.
So
they're
after
just like,
we finish crushing the Serpent Kingdoms, we're coming for you, and you're not going to put up any fight at all. So
that'd make another great scene, too. Like when the characters are first discover them to go up against them, and the guy just kind of... brushes his arm, they all go flying back.
Thinking like Sauron from the opening part of the Lord of the Rings,
exactly.
And he just bam, the party.
And the players. This would be hard to get rid of the metagame if people are kind of familiar with about the immortals.
Yeah.
Is how much do you tell the players about the immortals? So the players like get surprised. It's like, oh great, more slaves for me.
Yeah.
Or do they actually know? And they're like, are they still crazy?
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe what would be the surprise is we never forgot. Mm. We'll get to you.
Yeah.
It's like
Oh, shit.
So much for sneaking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's pretty good where you could do it either way, and both would be very different games.
Yeah. All right. So system, there is a Conan that uses the
D20. Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a broken record, but D&D would have all the stuff you would need, because it does have psychic books.
And it is fantasy.
I'm kind of imagining a cinematic story.
Okay.
Where... I'll preface this by saying I haven't tried it yet.
You're going to say Savage Worlds?
Yeah, I was going to suggest Savage Worlds, maybe.
Savage Worlds is pretty good because, especially with their powers system, it's similar to Hero, I think, in that you buy an effect rather than you buy a specific power.
That's what I was thinking, because you kind of need something to build those powers.
Exactly. It'd be really right. a good building system for it.
So, yeah, I'd say any Savage Worlds. Yeah, any system that allows you to kind of build in a power. Mm. Maybe not even maybe the player wouldn't build the powers, but the GM would build the powers. You know, and say, okay, here are the seven powers you can pick from because you're descended from the seven, whatever, immortals.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'd be cool, seven different realms or something.
Yeah. All right, Savage Worlds it is.
Well,
I think the questions are all clear, like, for that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we have even more story for this one, although we kind of piggybacked a lot on Hyperion.
Well, but, you know...
Hyperion. I keep thinking the Dan Simmons book. Yeah. Hyperion.
You know, from... some disparate roles were like, okay, let's see, Feudal Japan and Collapse. What are we going to do with that? Hyborian Age and Powers. What are we going to do with that? We actually came up with pretty good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was...
I'm impressed.
We kind of thought we would do more than two. What's over an hour? I don't know, guys. One quick one, or...
Can we get through one quickly?
All right, we'll do one quick one. Please feel free to turn off if you've heard enough. But I'm pretty pleased. I'm pleased enough with the way this went that we'll be revisiting mashups in the future, and like we said, we're going to be doing different takes on it. Like, we don't want to keep just making type of lists. So whichever style we come up with next time, we'll explain what that is. But again, we're doing mashups for the game.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do this one quickly. It's our third one.
Mashup number three.
So
the setting is 15.
That was...
Space opera, my favorite.
Space opera.
Space opera. Ooh, I was almost like, I want to cheat on that one.
No.
Not do it.
All right.
15 was...
crap, space opera.
Oh, Industrial Revolution or the Swinging 60s. Oh, that's good.
So let's see.
In space. And
Swinging space. And the setting.
Well, I hope this twist is good.
The twist is, yeah.
Four. Better not be robots. Genetics.
That's pretty boring.
Reroll that.
Reroll both.
Reroll both.
What is this?
First edition D&D? All right. Lyle's going to roll now.
Let's get a hot hand on there. Let's get a new roller.
And craps.
we played by the rules for the first two, so now we're cheating on the third one.
Because we've already said goodbye to the audience.
Yeah. So. 11.
11. Industrial Revolution.
Ah, that's the one you wanted.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I actually wanted the Swinging 60s, but...
Swinging 60s!
I'm not sure. Please don't be robots. Please don't be robots. I don't want to do steampunk. Daddy needs a new...
The twist is...
New twist.
Book.
15.
Plague.
Industrial Revolution and Plague.
A plague of machine robots. A plague of factory accidents.
The plague of child labor.
Ooh, that could be pretty interesting. Not the plague of child labor, but a plague that affects only children.
Hey,
so they lose all.
So they lose all their workers, workforce.
Yeah. Oh, I guess adults will have to do that job.
Or how about the other one, because of a sudden collapse,
we had like an entire group of people.
That's true.
Just because we already had the Feudal Japan collapse one.
When was typhoid fever around?
Typhoid Mary?
Yeah, typhoid Mary? Yeah. Wasn't that the
around about that time? Yeah.
There's probably
a lot of plagues around that time, just because of like cholera and
The dense city conditions, especially like in England.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Industrial Revolution and
but
plague.
We could also make it much more serious, where it's not just a plague within a city, but like it's like the bubonic plague. We're talking like 70-80% of the people are dead or dying, or something.
No. We were thinking.
Well, what about I was just thinking time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like the Black Plague happens in industrial Europe, mm-hmm. as opposed to medieval Europe or the Dark Ages. And what would that do?
To me, that sounds like a survival game.
Because
you can't...
Sounds like an old-worldly apocalypse.
Well, yeah, because you can't beat a plague,
That's not bad.
You can't go off journey somewhere and kill the source or
I know post-apocalypse. So basically, we're doing like a post-apocalypse game, but everything ended around the Industrial Revolution as opposed to
more modern sense. Because when you think about it, a lot of people, whether they do like there was an atomic bomb or nuclear war, or zompocalypse, or werepocalypse.
Yeah, werepocalypse.
We're all thinking of the modern setting, and where do you go from there? And then people are just changing, even the rapture or whatever, they're just changing the mechanism of apocalypse. So here we have, well, it was a plague, whatever, and it just killed everybody. But now you're...
Do you guys mind if I go totally out of the rules for this? I'm thinking, like, the Industrial Revolution is... good, but go one step back with the colonialist colonial period.
I think that's because we had it as one of our settings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking that that would be really cool. It's an apocalyptic colonial period because of all the boats. I mean, it'd be something kind of like Waterworld, but...
With land.
So no.
Land, Waterworld.
The plague, it's kind of like an allegory, but whatever. It's like the you know, how bad... colonialism and imperialism was, but yeah, they catch a plague from one of these things and they bring it back.
Yeah.
And then from the, I hate to say it, but the darkest reaches of Africa. I mean, come on, like a lot of the diseases come from there. But they bring it back and it wipes out a lot of things. Oh, and you can also make it maybe the places that they're, it's almost like a reverse of what happened to the Native Americans and the First Nations people, where they had no resistance. And they were wiped out through things like smallpox. But now you have Europe being wiped out, so maybe the like all these places, the places in Asia and Africa or South America, maybe they had a disease that the Europeans didn't have a resistance to, and they all get wiped out. So you can almost turn it into, again, another alternative history where one of these civilizations...
collapses.
No, sorry, the European civilization collapses. So, but one of these... one of these different civilizations, like what is now modern South Africa, but they become a dominant.
Almost like a reverse Crusades, maybe.
No. Have we abandoned the Industrial Revolution? Because if you go that route, why not say the Industrial Revolution didn't happen in Europe and North America? It happened in South America with the Aztecs and the Incas because of the plague.
Is that where you were going? Yeah.
So yeah. You can still have colonialism.
Instead of Europe being the center of the world.
It just happened somewhere else.
Yeah. I don't know if that's... I mean, I think there's two routes we can go here. We can go where another culture is now the dominant culture. So you might even want to then do their Industrial Revolution happens and it's happening in this way.
Yeah.
And this is what the world is. Let's say China is now the dominant culture.
Or 20 years.
Or Egypt, more like 19th century Egypt is the more dominant culture, or Brazil, whatever. Or we could go, you're now doing a post-apocalyptic game where society was wiped...
is being wiped out.
See, that's what I was going with.
By a plague. I would see like things have already collapsed, but it's still around. So there's still the danger of the plague. So
yeah, that's what I was saying.
You could have the outpost where they're very much afraid... And basically, society's collapsed to more like feudal or like kind of a Dark Ages stage, but they've collapsed from the Industrial Revolution. So the kind of the artifacts of their modern world or the advanced world are like Industrial Age artifacts.
That's where I was kind of going with
So there is like maybe trains. Oh my god, that train is still operating. How?
I was thinking with the boats to put the...
Fighting for coal instead of gas.
Actually,
I keep getting...
Go ahead. Put the entire party on a boat. Like, you've escaped from England or America or some country where...
a sailing ship.
Exactly. I don't know if it would work for... Well, that would go good for a campaign. They have to go to different places to get resources. You know, they need food and fresh water. But anywhere they go, there's going to be the problem with plague or, like, a collapsed society full of people who are, you know, I don't know... crazy now, zombies or whatever. Not zombies, but savages, cannibals, something like that. There's also the dramas being inside the boat.
I like that idea, but I don't know if I could play it for a campaign.
Yeah, I think it would probably make a better minigame, but also...
don't know, because that could be, what do they call it, like a wagon train style?
Yeah, maybe...
It could be like
It could be a wagon train style episodic, but if you're always dealing with, like, the threat of plague or cannibalism or all this other stuff, then that gets pretty grim. Right,
and which is cool.
But I imagine it would get
because one thing the Industrial Revolution, I mean, it was the Industrial Age; it wasn't the Information Age.
Right.
So, a lot of and another, so that you don't have all that communication. So, a lot of the parts of the world are very mysterious. So I think it's kind of a it'd be almost like if you had a science fiction game and every planet brings you something different.
Yeah.
See, I think you could do a lot more with that. If you do like and also technology in the industrial age, like the technology level of the different countries was a lot. There's a lot
different.
Yeah, vastly different from each other, as opposed to now, where everybody's kind of caught up.
Mm-hmm.
Even a developing world would still have like an internet, and sure that can collapse, but we know what it was
when
it collapsed. But there, I mean, even when you look at when you were playing your pulp game and that, like there was still like the mysterious Egypt and darkest Africa, and you still had that concept, and even in the 1930s. So this is like 50 years before that. So places were very mysterious, very unknown. So that would be fun to like sail to different things. And it's like maybe like, oh my God, the Chinese have built this amazing civilization. So it doesn't have to necessarily be dark. Maybe, but maybe the players, and it kind of gets into like Industrial Revolution racism or nationalism or whatever. It's like this society is amazing, but it's built on like a Chinese model. Do we want to be a part of this?
Yeah,
do we want to import this?
Because they're like, almost like Star Trek. It's like that time. If the British Empire suddenly stopped functioning, what happens to India and China?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe India is like, wow, we're fine without you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were able
to. Your trains.
Yeah, we had.
And now you don't have tea.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, well, we had the leper colony, so we were able to quarantine the plague guys.
Yeah,
yeah. And of course, the plague and the leper people are killing each other.
But I think, like you said, maybe having the plague as a constant antagonist would probably be too much, but make that maybe like the overtone of it.
But you don't know, because you don't know what parts of the world were affected by the plague.
And if you're talking about on a sailing ship, if you left from the coast of England and maybe went towards the U.S., that's 3 months' time to cross the ocean. Who knows what's happened in between that or not.
And if people get tired of it, then you could do. All right, you've landed in Australia, and guess what? Totally unaffected.
Which is also something you could say, maybe there's stories of
unaffected reached it. Land. Yeah, we've reached it. So it's like Battlestar Galactica, and you're looking for Earth.
Yeah.
And now you found it, guys. And then I think that would provide a nice ending for the players, because then it's like, yeah, that was really good. But maybe if they're eating up the dark stuff, you're like, okay, now it's going to be zombies, or... Mm. Now this plague has turned everybody into vampires. I mean, there's so much stuff you can do with that. All right.
Cool.
So that was pretty good.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. And what system?
Ooh.
Once again, a universal, just because you want to create a really expansive universe.
Yeah.
You want to be able to go in any kind of direction.
I'd say GURPS or Savage Worlds.
Fate, maybe. Jury's still out on that one. Don't know.
Yeah, we'll talk about Fate in a later episode. Mm. Yeah. But
I could do Fate or World of Darkness or...
Again, depending on how dark you want to go. World of Darkness, I don't know. I don't know if...
A lighter version, Ubiquity?
Ubiquity, I could see, because it has that pulp air. It's already
Like, the reason why I say GURPS or Savage Worlds is that they have support. So if you're going to create the place from scratch, the actual world from scratch, then all the crunch stuff should be done for you.
I might say maybe Savage Worlds, because it's a much lighter system than GURPS. You could build things much easier.
I guess it depends if you want it to be cinematic or gritty.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely.
But you have a good point, Lyle, about making it easy on yourself by choosing a system that already has
zombies
kind of that support built in.
Yeah,
yeah. If you did do World of Darkness or Ubiquity, you'd have to build all that stuff from the ground up.
Right.
Yeah, World of Darkness would definitely. If you want to have a great, they're all vampires. You got that. Then you kind of run out of they're all fairies. Yeah.
The fairy plague.
Or I was thinking like...
Let me guess, are these ones going to be werewolves?
Yeah.
Maybe? All right.
That's just pretty good. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
All right, so like we said, the next time we do mashups, which is not going to be the next episode is going to be...
Campaign Confessions, Changeling?
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And there's a big enough pause we can cut it out later.
Okay.
So we will be revisiting it with a new spin or a new twist. Ha! Ha! But thanks for tuning in, and a special thank you for those people that tuned in for the third
one yeah.
And endured.
All those re-rolls.
Yeah.
No robots.
Okay. As usual, you can find us online at www.idlereadhands.com. We've finally got a forum up, so check us out on there. Please post something if you have any ideas for us, some mashups of your own.
And if we forget anything in an episode that you thought we should have brought up,
yeah,
but we're certainly going to take advantage of that on the forum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent. So thanks for tuning in. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idolredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.